Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're going to introduce you to a premier cancer cause, the Connecticut Cancer Foundation, that supported over 8,000 families struggling with the disease, along with devoting millions to cancer research. We're going to hear about their No Shave CT activities and get a preview of what's to come as they continue planning for the foundation's celebrity-studded gala early next year. Then we're going to be talking with an environmental architect about the water we drink and consume in our households and communities and about the increasing risks of the various contaminants that could impact our personal and public health. And we're going to close with our friends from Goodwill of Western and Northern Connecticut, which is doing incredible work locating and recruiting veterans facing homelessness in order to better support them with finding stable places to live, new jobs and careers, and a number of other important services. And how you can support local service members at Goodwill's Stand Up for Veterans event coming up November 18th. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. The Connecticut Insurance Department and Access Health CT are urging consumers to research their health care coverage options now that we are into the open enrollment period that began November 1st. Consumers are strongly encouraged to take the time to fully understand what their coverage options, premiums, and out-of-pocket costs are, and to also understand how they work before purchasing a health insurance plan. Access Health CT is hosting enrollment fairs throughout the state during the entire open enrollment period, and in addition, residents can visit any of Access Health CT's Navigator partner locations for expert help from enrollment specialists. To learn more, just visit accesshealthct.com. Well, if you notice one of your local police officers or maybe a Connecticut State Trooper or other law enforcement officer in your proximity is looking a little scruffier than maybe they should this November, chances are good it's because they are supporting the Connecticut Cancer Foundation. And I'm so pleased to have on the program this morning to talk about that and all the great work that the foundation does. Their co-founder, Jane Ellis, who's president and executive director. If you want to know more about this organization, they are found at ctcancerfoundation.org. So, Jane, great to make your acquaintance, and thank you for taking some time to talk with us this morning about this foundation. You've been working with them and since its inception almost 35 years ago, almost $7 million has been granted and has supported 8,000 plus Connecticut families dealing with the financial hardships tied to grappling with cancer. So as a cancer survivor myself, thank you personally for your support. So take us back to those early days there in the mid 80s. And I mean, you were one of those people that had to sit there and hear those horrific words that your husband, John, has cancer.
Yes. Good morning, John. And thank you very much for having me today. Yes. So 36 years ago, John was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease, and he made a promise that if he was cured and lived, that he would spend the rest of his life helping other Connecticut cancer patients. And that's exactly what he did. So we thought, oh, okay, let's form a foundation. And we did. But the next step is, how do we raise funds? So John reached out to some of his baseball buddies because he played Major League Baseball for 13 years. And we thought, well, we'll have a little dinner and we'll see if we can raise some money. Well, that little dinner was turned out to be the backbone of our foundation 35 years later that we've been doing annually. But that first dinner was perhaps the greatest dinner that we've had to date. We had Mickey Mantle, Whitey Ford, and Billy Martin. We sort of raised the bar pretty high. The second year we had Joe DiMaggio, Yogi Berra. And we've been going ever since and having many of the Hall of Famers and legends and over the years. And we're very fortunate because we've moved. Our first dinner was held at the Little Groton Motor Inn in Groton, Connecticut, because there were no big fancy casino hotels. And since we've been very fortunate to be supported by Mohegan Sun. So that's where our annual dinner takes place each February.
Very good. So any hints yet as to who some of the luminaries might be to get people excited to maybe get on your website and start looking for tickets?
Yeah, not yet. I'm working on that, coinciding with No Shave CT. So in the back of my mind, having some thoughts about, we had a wonderful dinner last February. It's our Win dinner that was based on our Win bracelet that you can purchase online, and that's supporting cancer patients. And it's sort of first base, second base, third base, and home plate for a win against cancer. And so it's diagnosis, treatment, financial hardship, and coming home plate for a win against cancer. So what I did was, the theme of the dinner was the Win dinner, and we had the perhaps the greatest catcher that ever played the game, Johnny Bench. So he joined us, and we had first base, we had Chris Chambliss at first base, second base we had Willie Randolph, and third base we had Greg Nettles. So it was a really, really fun dinner, and I'm trying to figure out if we're going to continue that theme annually, and working on it diligently.
Well, suffice to say, anybody who loves sports or who wants to support a premier cancer cause here in Connecticut should keep their eyes on the headlines or visit ctcancerfoundation.org for the announcement of who will be at the head table in February, and that's great. You did mention No Shave CT. I'm feeling a little scruffy myself this morning, having supported a few of my local police officers. But where did this whole concept come from?
Yeah, well, it came 5 years ago by the police department in Ledyard. They had done No Shave November. And they were gracious enough to send us a check. And after they completed their beard growing, and so I thought, gee, this is a wonderful idea. I hadn't really thought about it. And so I really have them to thank for planting the idea of No Shave. So we are No Shave CT because we're a local. Mm-hmm. So No Shave November is the national organization that we're not involved with.
Got it.
So No Shave CT means that all of our funds stay here locally in Connecticut to help Connecticut cancer patients. And 100% of what we raise in this fundraiser goes to helping Connecticut cancer patients right in our own backyards.
Great. Then at this point, as we're moving into the first full weekend of November here, do you have some idea of how many Connecticut police departments might already be on board and developing their own fundraising for No Shave CT?
I do. Gratefully, we have more than 60 police departments across the state participating with us. And I'm so grateful to all these police departments who believe in what we're doing, and they want to help cancer patients right in their own backyards. And they're so wonderful to work with. And
so, Jane, I understand that part of the No Shave CT initiative includes some very motivated ambassadors.
Yes, it does. Each year we try to select children and families who are in great need of our financial support. And so through social workers at Yale New Haven Hospital, we're able to identify these children. This year we have five children, one from Bristol, Greenwich, Meriden, Westbrook, Danbury. And three of the children are being raised by single moms. And so the hardship is even more complicated there. And because of No Shape CT, these families will receive a very significant grant that will make an amazing impact on their lives.
I was going to say, folks want to learn more and actually get a look at these wonderful ambassadors, they can just do that at the website ctcancerfoundation.org, right?
Yeah, so they can go directly to they can go directly to noshapect.org. We're so grateful that we have an enormously generous presenting sponsor in SCHIC that is headquartered in Shelton. Mm-hmm. So they're local as well, and they love the idea that we're local. And many other wonderful sponsors like Pasta Vita and Liberty Bank and Colt and Executive Auto Group, iHeartMedia, and the list goes on and on. So we have quite wonderful support, and we're excited because we're only at November 3rd, and we've already raised over $150,000. And I have a very aggressive goal this year of $500,000 in honor of my beloved husband, John, who recently lost his second battle to cancer in April.
Well, I'm so sorry to hear that, Jane.
Thank you.
The legacy lives on strong in his name and through your continued energy and efforts. It must be extremely challenging, but in some ways maybe aiding in the healing and the grieving.
Oh, it certainly does. It's been very difficult because it was very shocking. It was only a 3-month period from when he was diagnosed to when he passed, so it was quite shocking. And but on the bright side of it, he fulfilled his promise. He said that he would spend the rest of his life supporting Connecticut cancer patients, and that's exactly what he did with laser focus for 35 years.
So as we mentioned in the introduction, almost $7 million helping more than 8,000 Connecticut families, but not just that, support to specifically Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, which right now is supporting and assisting a number of my acquaintances and family members who are grappling with cancer. $2.5 million plus to support that organization. Tell us a little bit about the connection to Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Yes. So the doctor, Dr. Yahalam, who treated John 36 years ago and saved his life, has been doing some wonderful research. And so we've been supporting that research for probably 25 years now. And most recently, he's focused on getting wonderful results. His expertise is radiation oncology. And they're seeing results where less radiation is just as successful, which is something I think we all want to hear. Mm-hmm. And so we've become, he and John became like brothers over these 36 years. They were very close, and he's doing amazing research work there. So we're very proud of him and proud to support that effort and research.
So aside from delivering millions of dollars to support and advance this important research, the Connecticut Cancer Patient Assistance Program is really another huge delivery vehicle for you and is the way that these 8,000 plus Connecticut families have gotten to know the Connecticut Cancer Foundation. Tell us a little bit about that piece of the foundation.
Well, that's mainly the majority of the funding goes to Connecticut cancer patients to help with critical everyday living expenses such as rent, mortgage, utilities, food, things like that, where when you can't work, it's very simple. You're unable to pay your bills. Or if you have a sick child, a sick child is a sick family, and we have to remember that the center for treatment is the family. So when you have a sick child and you cannot work, it affects how you're able to pay your bills. And And the hardships are just overwhelming. The financial side effect of cancer is just overwhelming. And I believe most of us have been affected by cancer in some way, whether it's ourselves or we know someone. And the financial hardships that follow are just enormous. And we believe that no one should have to worry about a roof over their heads, lights on, and food on the table while they're battling cancer.
Do individuals approach you, or if they are under treatment and a doctor's care, or if they are being cared for in a facility, do they need to go through an intermediate to access consideration for assistance from the foundation?
They do not. They can come directly to the foundation, but we find that the majority of our applications come through oncology social workers. So we have developed quite an extensive network with most of the hospitals throughout the state. And so therefore, I'd say probably 99% of our applications come via the oncology social worker who is on the front lines. They work with these patients. They see who needs help and who needs it critically fast. That's something that we do as well. If you can send us an application on Friday, if it's complete, we send out checks each Monday. I read these very sad applications. That's how I start out my week. And we're able to send out checks immediately. So that's something. There's very little red tape. I want to make it simple for cancer patients to receive our funding, and that's what we've done.
Excellent. Before we go, I also see that there is something called a Connecticut Cancer Foundation Fine Art Program, and I'm not sure if that is among the things that kind of maybe decompressed a little bit during the COVID era, but you still are promoting it on the website. Is that still happening?
It is, and it did. We got sidetracked with COVID. In 2019, we had five art exhibits here at the building in Old Saybrook. And so we plan to get back on track now that it seems like the world is waking up again from COVID. And so it is part of our idea of raising funds is through fine art, yes.
So how does that work? How do folks connect with that specific initiative?
Yes, well, if an artist is listening out there and we take donations of fine art, we have invested in fine art and resold the fine art for profit. So we're finding that it's a creative way that actually John wanted to explore to help raise funds for the foundation.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate your time this morning. Jane Ellis is a co-founder and president and executive director of the Connecticut Cancer Foundation. They are presently promoting No Shave CT with 60 plus police departments and police agencies across the state of Connecticut. Founded in 1987 by the late Major League Baseball player John Ellis, this organization has assisted more than 8,000 Connecticut families, donated over $2.5 million to support cutting-edge cancer research at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and as you have just heard, have a fine art program for any of you who might be inclined. If you'd like to support this organization or find out more, or if you know somebody who is grappling with cancer or you are yourself, please be in touch with them if you need assistance. CT Cancer Foundation.org is the website. Jane, great to make your acquaintance and hope to be talking to you again around this time next year. And let's keep this No Shave CT initiative partnership going between our radio stations and your great organization. Thank you so much. Well, we've been waiting for a few weeks to have a conversation that really touches every single person within the sound of our voice, even if you're not in Connecticut, even if you're not in the United States, for that matter. We're talking about water quality, and longtime listeners to the program may remember our award-winning series about protecting and preserving our precious water supply. And while we're not going to be reintroducing that as a series, we have intermittently been talking over the past few years as the term PFAS have entered into our vernacular, the forever chemicals that are infiltrating and are probably within each and every one of us. We've also been hearing a lot about lead poisoning and lead in water service lines that, of course, have affected entire communities and regions. And we've got a great source, new friend to the award-winning For the People, Jim Roberts. He's a senior vice president and water wastewater market director for a company called H2M Architects and Engineers, and his focus is on clean water. And so, Jim, without further ado, thanks for joining us on the program this morning. While we are no stranger to talking about water and water quality and the things that compromise it, you certainly have a wealth of expertise way beyond what we know. So we're so glad to add you to our asset list and be able to check in with you to talk a little bit more about water quality. So while this has kind of been out in the headlines and in the news, it seems like every week we're hearing more and more about it. Is this just because it's sort of like becoming the flavor of the week in the media, or are things really getting worse out there in terms of compromised water quality?
John, those are all excellent questions, and I'd like to thank you for adding me to your asset list, although that seems a little bit off-putting. I don't know if I'm, you know, but I'm happy to be a contributor and a resource. And
yeah, we all do what we do, and this is what you do. And a lot of folks out there are absolutely concerned about the water that's going into their bodies and their children and into their homes and businesses. So
yeah.
So no, what's happening?
It's real. Yeah, and one other thing, John, that I'll just add to the short bio. So I am a senior vice president with H2M, but just for background, I was also the deputy commissioner for the New York City Department of Environmental Protection, Bureau of Water and Sewer Operations, for over a decade, and spent 34 years working with DEP. So my career has really been in you know, around water supply and wastewater, but, you know, specifically here, drinking water for 40 years at this point. So I just figured that's helpful, that I also come from the operations side. So I get what it means to be somebody who's delivering water, right?
So let us call you the expert and you just be the guy who's been doing it for 40 years.
Perfect. All right. So to your point, I don't think it's the media flavor of the month. I think perfluoroalkyl substances and PFAS is a simpler way of putting it. And anybody who's spent time in chemistry class and organic chemistry classes over either high school or college can get as detailed as they want with that. But these substances really originate from things that I think everybody in our society would have considered to be advancements at one point, right? And you know, we talk about things like Scotch guarding your furniture so they don't get stained, or Teflon on your your pans, your frying pans, so nothing sticks, and things that everybody really embraced. And over time. And, you know, there's some broader discussion that we won't necessarily go into here over time. I think maybe the chemical companies knew more than they shared about the downstream, no pun intended, consequence of these chemicals. But, they certainly have become very sort of ubiquitous in water supply systems across the country, certainly here in the Northeast region in Connecticut.
Yeah, and they continue to be yeah. proliferating in a lot of products, including food wrapping and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And so, you know, the sort of pathway or the vehicles by which these chemicals get into the supplies can be complex. Certainly on the drinking water side, you identify them and then you eliminate them and you serve the water to the customers, and, you know, you've eradicated it, if you will. But, the really broader issue is how to keep them from getting into the water supplies to begin with. The full water cycle, if you will, from, you know, precipitation to water supply to consumption to wastewater treatment. I think this issue is becoming a very, very focal point now for the wastewater side of the industry as well, right? You know, or the solid waste, as you talk about wrappers, right? So you have solid waste that's got these chemicals on them, and they're into your landfills, and that landfill, you know, hits the water streams that are running behind. It winds up in the lakes, the rivers, and, you know, it is a cycle for sure. And I think the other thing too, John, that's very important. Why all of a sudden is this an issue? I think technology has advanced to the point where we can identify these compounds at very, very, very small levels. Mm-hmm. You know, that technology perhaps didn't exist 20 years ago. You couldn't see far enough down into
the micro. Yeah.
Right. Yep. Right. Right. And that's had a big impact on it. And I think, you know, historically the way the drinking water industry has really dealt with contaminants and water quality is by evaluating basically what are the health impacts, right? Because sure. at the end of the day, it's all about public health.
Yep.
The people who do sort of that side of the business, the public health officials that look at the impacts of anything on human beings over long periods of time at certain concentrations, and you know, that's been going on for a long time, and that's how we come up with, you know, levels of sort of acceptable contamination, if you will. I mean, it sounds oxymoronic to say that, but what has to come into play as well is the fact that you're not really trying to drive the water to where it has nothing in it. You're trying to drive it to the point so it's not distilled water. You're trying to drive it to the point where it's eliminated all of the contaminants that are known or potentially known to be harmful to human consumption, right? And there's a balance, because the further you can distill the water, you know, but A, it's probably not going to be good for you to drink. It's probably a poison at that level, and you don't have to. And it costs the treatment costs are astronomical. So the industry has always been faced with balancing, those two sides of the equation. What's the public health risk? And what can you do to mitigate that risk, and at what cost? And the intersection of those questions is challenging for every public water supplier in the country for certain. And as perfluorinated have really come to the top of the box in terms of things that people are focusing on.
Right.
It's a costly endeavor.
Well, we're going to take a very brief break, Jim, and come back and talk to you about the attention that the lawmakers, the ones who have the power to make changes, that are being advised by their kind of their environmental stewards and watchdogs in other kind of companion government agencies are advising them. But before we take a break, we see PFAS PFAS and the term forever chemicals kind of used interchangeably, but there are a lot more forever chemicals than those, you know, kind of under the PFAS umbrella, right?
Well, I think, and just so PFAS really covers a long list of compounds that fall into the umbrella. There are other, I mean, 1,4-dioxane would be the other one that jumps immediately to my mind as being something that's sort of front of mind, you know, a forever chemical.
And what is that? What is that typically used for, or in what processes?
Yeah, so the 1,4-dioxane issues really came around as a byproduct of industry like degreasing and sort of machine parts treatment.
So something we're all too familiar with here in the northeastern United States,
especially
with the legacy of manufacturing and these types of businesses. Very good.
Correct.
Well, I appreciate that definition. Stay with me for just a few moments, and we'll come right back, folks. We're talking to Jim Roberts about the infiltration of more and more forever chemicals that may be doing harm or potentially do harm to you and your family and your community. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. On the heels of our recent For the People segment on electric vehicles and car charging stations, and as the demand for information about electric vehicles grows, Eversource, in collaboration with United Illuminating, has unveiled Choose EV, a new online educational tool that features information and technical assistance. The platform, which is available at eversource.com and uinet.com, offers customers a variety of ways to learn more about EVs and help them make decisions when comparing vehicles and charging options. So if you want to know more about electric vehicles or charging stations, just go to eversource.com or uinet.com and look for their new platform, Choose EV. We're back with Jim Roberts, and we're so pleased to be back talking about a subject that we spent so much time dealing with here on the award-winning For the People several years ago, and that's protecting and preserving our precious and some say dwindling clean water supply. Jim is with H2M Architects and Engineers. He's a former environmental and water specialist with New York City Department of Environmental Protection. Pleased to have you back, Jim. Thank you. So as we kind of set up going into the break, there are agencies from municipal to county to state to federal that all, like you, have your eyes on the threat, so to speak, or threats. So how is the process going in communicating these needs and the challenges that you explain the quote unquote industry has in terms of balancing the cost and the processes that need to happen to try to minimize or remove the impact of these dangerous contaminants? How is government and the ones who have the power to make the changes, how are they doing?
John, again, I think an excellent question, and perhaps just a real high level understanding of the way it typically works. So the federal government, the EPA, has the Safe Drinking Water Act, which is sort of the you know, the overarching national standards for all drinking water processes and what's safe and what isn't, right? Each of the states has the ability to regulate Anything beyond what's regulated at the EPA level, or to regulate at a more stringent level, you know, what is laid out in the EPA, you know, guidelines or, you know, requirements. What has happened is the EPA has in some places struggled with sort of coming to a conclusion on some of these particular, you know, contaminants. We talk about the whole population of things as emerging contaminants. What are the new things that we're seeing that we need to pay attention to? There is a process in the EPA works that they call it the unregulated contaminant listing, right? So there's the UCMR. So they poll and they have water suppliers testing for various other chemicals, right? Are these things out there? Are they a concern? And then, you know, there's a process that they go through. And what's happened in the past, certainly within the last decade, maybe just a little bit short of that, is I think a lot of the states have sort of realized that the EPA is perhaps not moving as expeditiously as the states would like. And so the states have gone and started to regulate these compounds themselves. And that is not necessarily a bad thing, but what does become challenging is when you have one state that views it, you know, one way yep. and the other state yep. views it the other way. It would certainly be more helpful if there was sort of uniformity, you know, more helpful in terms of the industry, make sure. it a little bit clearer.
Yep. But also, locally, but I see yeah. that I see the challenge, Jim, because
yeah.
there are the multi-billion-dollar powerhouses retaining lobbyists to try to minimize the cost impact on their entities, and you have environmental organizations, maybe. Probably passionately advocating to regulate or outlaw even some of these chemicals. So, you know, it's a conversation for 2 or 3 hours worth of radio talk to be able to dig into it. But in the last 3 or 4 minutes that we have, there is a population of people who are out there that might be listening saying, I've got a well. I'm pumping my own clean water right out of Mother Earth, and I've got a nice little bolt-on water purification unit on my sink, and you know, a jug in my fridge that has a filter in it. So I'm the beneficiary of the cleanest, purest water that anyone can get. What do folks with wells need to know?
You know, perfect. And I'm going to put the disclaimer in front of it. I'm going to tell you that every individual homeowner needs to be informed and should consult with professionals about their specifics, because water quality is you know, a very specific case in almost all cases. But with that said, I think if you are taking water from a public supplier, you have some confidence that you should have confidence that there are a lot of professionals who are paying attention to these things, and you know, at the state level, the local levels, and the operators and you know, the people who run these systems, right? If you own a private well, I think it is certainly judicious to have a real understanding, you know, by testing whether your local municipality will facilitate that testing for you. I think it's incumbent upon you to understand what's in that water. You don't see it, you don't smell it, right? So these things are at, you know, we're talking about things in parts per trillion concentrations, John, mm-hmm. right? So, sure. So you know, parts per trillion is an eyedropper in a couple Olympic swimming pools, right?
Yeah.
And so I think you need to know what's in the water as it relates to filter systems and so on and so forth. Very complex. And there are a lot of people out there selling a lot of things, right? And I won't opine on that. But what I will tell you is that if you are being a really responsible consumer and an educated consumer, that, and you do have a system that is dealing with whatever the whatever you're trying to deal with, because there are different systems for whatever contaminant you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. The most important thing is to make sure that the system does what it's supposed to do, and then really you've got to maintain them. And I think that's where we see in the industry, we see a big problem with home systems. When people aren't maintaining them, they could be actually doing themselves a lot more harm, because contaminants can sort of multiply and build up on, filters, for example, if they're not changed out. And that can be worse than not having a filter at all. So you need to be educated. You need to be making sure that you're talking to professionals about it. And you do need to do, the maintenance on it. And sometimes it's not as easy as it sounds for, certain segments of the population, maybe the elderly or what have you, right?
But I imagine in the last minute or so that we have, Jim, that folks here in Connecticut that are listening, and our friends out on Long Island and in some areas of New York, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island, they can consult their municipal or county health department or health district, the first line of defense if they have questions regarding water testing or well water or public water supply concerns, right?
Yeah, without question, the first line of defense is your local health department for sure. I think that's the best advice that you can give them, and most county health departments do have some. They will either have programs or they'll be able to provide guidance to state programs. Without question, that's the best advice, because again, it's a public health issue, and they're up to speed on it. They're working hand in hand with the water supply industry on a day-to-day basis.
Excellent. Well, once in a while on Sunday morning, we bring you a little Sunday science lesson. This one wasn't too deep, and for my turn for a pun, but we really appreciate all the information. Jim Roberts is a Senior Vice President and Water Wastewater Market Director for H2M Architects and Engineers. He's a former New York City Department of Environmental Protection specialist in terms of water and wastewater. Great resources and good information. Great conversation this morning, Jim, and we can't wait to talk to you again. Hopefully we'll be able to circle back in a few months and pick up the conversation. Thank you so much. Well, we opened up the show telling you how you can support a great regional statewide cancer cause, and we're going to close it out with another group of individuals who's very near and dear to our hearts here at Connoisseur Media and the award-winning For the People Veterans, and a agency who's been near and dear to the award-winning For the People for 30 plus years, Goodwill. And I'm so pleased Heather Marquet is with us. She is VP of Human Services for Goodwill of Western and Northern Connecticut. GWCT.org is their website, and they really work and succeed at strengthening communities by helping people with disabilities and other disadvantages maximize independence through job training and other support services. We're going to be telling you how you can get involved in a fantastic activity, and how veterans can also get a little bit of help and support as we start moving toward the winter months. So without further ado, Heather, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, John. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation with you.
So give us the deeper background. Goodwill organizations across Connecticut have gone through a lot of changes and consolidation over the past 30 years that we've been helping to promote all the great work that you have collectively done. Tell us the region and jurisdictions that you and your agency are serving right now.
So Goodwill Western Northern Connecticut, we serve most of Connecticut, with the exception of New Haven and New London counties. We are fortunate to have touched about 5,000 lives a year through our human services programs. When you see our stores in the community, what happens every time you have a purchase or you donate, the funds that are generated through that store comes back and funds our human services program. So we can do things in the community like what we're talking about today. But our services run the gamut from helping individuals with intellectual disabilities to helping individuals achieve employment who have barriers to employment and strengthening our communities. And just recently, we were fortunate to be awarded a grant that's called the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program through the Department of Labor, where we're specifically looking for veterans in Fairfield County and hope to connect them to employment. And the veterans that we're trying to help are veterans who are either homeless or at risk of homelessness.
So how does your agency go about identifying individuals to try to recruit into this program? Is it with other community partnerships throughout Fairfield County?
That's a great question, John. We're fortunate to have a team in our that's located out of our Bridgeport facility, and we try to get out there in the community. We have partnerships with the VA. We have partnerships basically with anybody who might touch the life of a veteran. So American Job Centers are also our partners, and we have an internal career center throughout our entire state that helps support these individuals get jobs. So we have a team that is available at any time. So if you happen to know a veteran that could use our help, please feel free to reach out to 475-332-2000, and then we can help. We can take it from there.
So you have trained intervention specialists who try to make contact with these individuals?
You got it. And those folks that work for us can help a veteran find a job, help connect them to securing housing and other resources in the community to start their journey on a more independent, supported future. You know, these are the men and women that have taken care of our country, and there's nothing more we want to do than to help them achieve their goals.
Well, you know, and I know that a lot of these individuals may be homeless because they are raised and have become developed a mindset, I guess I should say, that they don't want or can't, they don't need other people's help. I guess that's the biggest challenge and the biggest bridge to cross, because once you have engaged them, I imagine that you've been quite successful.
Yeah, we've only been running this program since July. We just kind of started getting up and running, and we have had we've had the opportunity to work with individuals and achieve housing and achieve jobs and really kind of set folks on a track of sustainability to reach their goals. I think that it's a challenge to find individuals who are willing to accept the help, and trust is a big factor. And what's unique about our program is we're able to spend the time with people to really get to know what they want, what they need. And it doesn't just stop at getting somebody a job. It's really about how do we continue to support you. So once we create a relationship with a veteran, we're here to support them to reach the goals that they want. That's not necessarily the goals we want for them, but the goals that they want for themselves.
And as we try to remind people as often as we can, when you think about Fairfield County, you're still thinking about kind of one of the richest stretches of real estate on the planet. And yet, you know, having worked in the greater Bridgeport area with a lot of nonprofits and throughout Fairfield County and North Points North, we know that even the most affluent towns still have veterans who are residing within their borders, who are either homeless or right on the edge.
Absolutely. And, you know, homelessness doesn't always look, or risk of homelessness doesn't look the same as what we might traditionally see it. It might be somebody who's coming back from, you know, from their stint, and they're trying to reintegrate into the community, and we can help with that. It could be somebody who's moved here recently, or somebody who was employed and faced a layoff, and now they're at risk of losing their housing, and we can help there. So it also might be somebody who is looking for a different career change. So on top of just finding any job, we want to find the right job. We want to set these individuals up in a career that speaks to them. So that might involve some training. It might involve learning skills that can really help increase wages and have the kind of future that they've envisioned. And so we're kind of a one-stop shop. And if we don't do it, we know people who can help with really any aspect. So, you know, we're really, and the hardest part, quite frankly, is finding the individuals who could use our help. And word of mouth is such a great tool. And again, so thankful for having this opportunity to chat with you, John, just to kind of raise awareness to the issue and for folks to know that there is a resource and Goodwill is here to help with this issue.
Well, we've heard so much about the great work that Goodwill is doing to make the connections and provide the support, but everybody who's listening to this program has an opportunity to help support this program. Coming up on November 18th is Stand Up for Veterans from 12:30 to 4 p.m. At the Goodwill headquarters down on Ocean Terrace in Bridgeport. Tell us and everyone how they can help.
So we are so incredibly happy to have this event on the 18th. And what we're really looking to do is to get to show the community that we're here for veterans. And we want our veterans in the community to associate Goodwill with a resource. And so what we're going to do in that event is we're going to give out winter coats, lunch, care packages. We're going to have some haircuts set up. And then we have all the people in the room to really connect with career services. So really, we want to get to know our veterans in our community. And so this will be available for the first 100 attendees. The location of the event is 165 Ocean Terrace. That's in Bridgeport. And that's our Goodwill headquarters. So if you know somebody who is a veteran or is a veteran who is challenged with finding a job, needs some assistance, have them come on down. We're here to help. We will be checking VA cards or any kind of paperwork to make sure that we have we have the right information for everyone, but we ask that if you know somebody, refer them down to us. And if you happen to have anything that you think might be helpful for the event, feel free to call us at 475-332-2000.
Very good. And if folks want to specifically assist in helping to underwrite your veteran support programs, they can go to gwct.org to find out how to make a direct donation or a designated donation for the cause. Heather Marquet is the Vice President of Human Services for Goodwill of Western and Northern Connecticut. Once again, gwct.org. And if you know a vet, pencil in November 18th from 12:30 to 4 p.m. and have them head to the Goodwill offices at Ocean Terrace in Bridgeport for Stand Up for Veterans. Heather, thank you and your colleagues so much for the great work you're doing. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th, and every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.